This episode of Speakers of Heidelin is made possible by our generous patrons. Special thanks to our supreme and master speakers, Omega Cat Comet, Erisu Yamakawa, Alex Franco AV, Winebow Brood, Aurora Templeton, Psyche, Azuta Starbreeze, Cletus Oreo, Nina Grimstarter, Lily Black, Bob CZ, Mictor Robintow, Anathos Moonscar, Pamela Isley, Elenreal Maximus, Codrith Novelist, Mira Miri, Celesto Notrell, Lazy Boy, Luke Osborne, Pandalu, Storm Arrow, Tex, Kylin, Arthur Law, Barry Danderard, Cypup, Spencer Christmas, Noy Fafnir, Celine DeLune, Edwin, Webster Wolf, Severa, Circa Barrakeel, AJ Brainswords, and Cass Ram, Ventos Tia, Ryark Forbear, Leighton the House, Tony, Arcadia Lunashine, Umbral Wind, Framboise Sakuro, Bergie, Fudge, and Cephiel. Support the show and become a patron today at patreon.com/speakersxiv. Thank you.
This is Speakers of Heidelin.
Good evening, Eorzeans. Welcome to Speakers of Heidelin, episode 392. I'm Lakeel Bravestone, and I'm joined today by Gyorgy Wiston, Mela Vanadar, and Rollo Dess.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going, fellas?
It's going. It's March 9th, 2024.
It's oppressively hot.
Yes.
It's hot in Australia. I'm so sorry you live there. Was it 36 degrees Celsius?
Not right now.
No, but it's coming.
It's only 7:30 in the morning.
Lousy, smart weather.
Today we have a lot. Today we feast. We have a lot of small stuff, some big stuff. So we'll talk about that, including an interview done by PC Gamer N. No, sorry, PC
what
Games
does N stand
N.
for.
Every time we. Network, right? PC Games Network with Kate Quinar from the trans, like what is her role?
She's the
new Koji Fox, essentially. Yeah.
Whatever his job was previously, lead localization, but not supervisor, because he's the supervisor.
He's the supervisor, yeah.
She was the one at FanFest.
She was.
Yeah. She was the one who sighed IJCP when he said he wanted to go and find Nofika.
Yes, yeah. We will also be talking about, of course, the upcoming Little Ladies Day and Hatching Tide event. And we'll be reading your Mogmail, speakersxiv.com/Mogmail. Please send us Mogmail. Stay tuned for the poster. We'll be answering questions from the Syndicate and, I guess, Pokemon. Only one question today.
That's good, though. That means loads of Pokemon.
Yeah, well, to be fair, we didn't do Pokemon last week. So I guess we owe them.
You owe it.
Yeah. We have a quick update for our live viewers. Tomorrow, Daylight Savings starts for the U.S., which means Speakers of Heidelin will start an hour later than usual for you. That's very important for our live viewers to know. We will start at, normally we would start at 3 p.m. Eastern, right? So 4 p.m. Next week. So keep that in mind.
This sucks, man.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this anymore.
It is annoying. For Europe, we will switch on the last Sunday. So that's on the 30th of March. At that point, we'll be caught up. And then Australia, of course, has their own... Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you're due for
it's a week after yours.
Why? Like, why don't we just come together? If we're gonna have this shitty system, at least do it at the same time.
We'll line back up and sync eventually.
Yes. By April, we are all back. So keep that in mind. Next week, 1 hour later than usual. All right. On that note, let's jump into recent events. Yes, and we start with the most exciting news story this week. a new mount, a new optional item is available on the Final Fantasy XIV online store. Wow, it's a banana. No?
Big banana.
It's a moon. It's a moon.
It's nice, though.
It can be yours for $24.
Just, you know, just at the beginning of Ramadan, so it's very nice to have a crescent moon.
True, I guess.
For Muslim players.
Ramadan-themed mount. That's beautiful. For $24 account-wide.
I didn't think it was that worth it, but Chad is pointing it out, and I had seen this previously. The Loperate does have quite a few animations depending on exactly what actions you're doing with the mount.
Okay. What action? Oh, it has, of course, it has unique actions, I guess. What does it do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, does it just, like,
wave? I don't know.
I don't know exactly what it does.
If it's ascending or descending, and then at your different mount speeds... And if you're flying or walking, it has different animations depending.
Okay.
Well, I'm mute.
If you want it, go get it.
There we go.
I don't hate it, like, conceptually. I remember this. I'm sure this was on another client or something. I'm sure this was teased a while back.
It's crazy. I in this economy, that much for a mount? I don't know, man. It's getting harder every year to justify.
It's a lot of value for money if you have 20 characters, Rollo. Or 24 characters. That's $1 a character.
You can only use them one at a time, though.
In a game that incentivizes you very heavily to play one character.
It's true.
The usual stance. I wish this was earnable in game.
I mean, it has a Loperate on it, so there's places where you might have earned it.
Well, it's why I'm so glad most of these mounts are gaudy and I don't want to have them. So those that love this aesthetic, go ham. I'm happy with what I have in game. Thank you.
Okay, Lucille. You'll always remember Sleipnir.
Don't fucking talk to me about Sleipnir. Because that shit should have been
exactly
in the game. That is the worst thing they've done. Fuck you. Okay.
So it's vitriol for that one.
Yeah.
They missed a chance to let you fish off of this.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Oh, yeah.
Fishing from a mount would be crazy.
Yeah, that would be crazy.
They should add that, but that would be insane.
I think DreamWorks would like to have a word, though.
Yeah.
You know.
They own the copy, the idea of fishing from the moon.
They would find a way. They'd find a way.
It wouldn't surprise me.
No. Okay. Well, there you go. Go get your mount if you want or don't, because it is a moon. That's all it is. All right. Moving on. There's some information about patch 6.58. Which I'll just quickly read. It's a post on the Lodestone. Patch 6.58 is scheduled to release on Tuesday, March 19th. This update will include an increase to the strength of the Echo granted in Pandemonium and Abyssea Savage, and adjustments to PvP actions, as well as address a number of known issues. Details about maintenance coinciding with the release of the patch will be shared in the future. And again, reminder that this is the patch where 32-bit support and DirectX 9 is cut. So this is your last day, Tuesday, March 18th would be your last day, because on March 19th, it's Ogre. But so run down to the shop and get a 64-bit computer or leave, I guess. I don't know what else to say.
AMD Phenom 2, baby. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah. They're cheap. You can get something that'll run the game still.
So a reminder that... also a reminder that this is the end of the PvP season, not series.
The season. Speaking of, though, we need to get to a point, Square Enix, where you're adding in a new series before this expansion, because this series has been going on for years.
Season.
No, series.
Oh, yeah.
The Battle Pass one.
Yeah.
Whichever the Battle Pass one is, there's not enough to do right now. We've already talked about this enough. The Moogle Tombstone events are good, but a new series would be a real welcome change.
I'm happy with this, Mela, because I still haven't finished it. So I'm more than happy to have more to... Because I don't play PvP very often.
I suppose you don't gain the benefits of us doing front lines on stream because it's a different character, so I can appreciate that. But
I have more progress on my Ragnarok character's PvP battle pass than my
That's
name.
My point, though. Like, I'm at, like, over level 30 on it because we constantly do PvP, and I've done this years ago.
Yeah, it's good.
I need new things to... I've not gone into Crystalline Conflict for months because I don't need to. Well, I like it.
Maybe not go so hard, Mela. Maybe calm down, you know? Let us others, you know?
You're
you know?
Too good, Mela. Yeah. Like, settle down.
Yeah.
We gotta flex.
Yeah. What the fuck? What is that?
Horrendous.
Yeah, whatever. They're not going to do that, Mela. It's always going to be like this. Once the system is introduced, it'll never change. Well,
this is the long one, so, I mean, it's the outlier. They're usually a lot shorter.
Okay, anything else to say about that? It's the last patch, most likely, unless there is a 0.59, but I find that unlikely. But maybe,
I mean, everything's already unlocked now, right?
I think. And now we're getting the maximums echo.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else for them to do.
No.
Yeah.
So
the game's dead. It's over,
guys. Yeah, that's the last patch ever, actually. So sorry to the Xbox players that have joined. Bye.
It's the last patch it's until over. Summertime.
Sorry, you're playing a fucking dead game. They don't even try with events anymore. It's over, guys.
Yeah, no. Okay, it's the last patch before the expansion. So that's that. 6.58. Please look forward to it. Speaking of Xbox players... we finally have a date for the full release on Xbox, March the 21st. I'm assuming, well, it is implying here that, the beta will just run into that and then it just goes open fully as a release.
That was quick. It was quite fast.
Yeah.
No major issues, I guess. That's nice.
Not that I
have. Glad it's been going smoothly. And people have been liking
it. I have actually seen a reasonable number of videos and such from like new Xbox player trying us. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you were correct, Rollo, in all of the memes returning for the...
We appreciate... Well, I love that because it's like nostalgic. Like, it happens in waves. And now is another wave of people discovering like all the weird shit we discovered 10 years ago.
There's always the one gooner, though, who's like, Minfilia butt cleavage?
There like, will be, for sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The duality of man, the post of Irma Gerd, and then Minfilia butt cleavage.
Don't worry, Lakil, you get to experience all over again when Switch 2 release comes out.
Oh, that's true. And they've only got to a Realm Reborn. Think about how good it's going to be when they get to our two favorite characters from Shadowbringers, Dickon and the other one.
Yes. Right. I almost said their name, but now you've made...
No, not on,
yeah, but you
not on
have
the
made her name filthy.
Not it is filthy, but not on the podcast.
Right. I think her name would literally, actually, unironically get us demonetized because the algorithm...
But it's her name!
Okay, well, anyways, March 21st, welcome, Xbox players, you are part of the fold now. No Switch, that's all I'll say on that.
Switch 2, no Switch 2.
I'm sorry, Lakil, it's bound to happen.
We're talking Lakil. About Switch 2 here, Lakil, no one's asking
Don't,
Switch 2.
I'm not rage baiting,
the
I'm not taking
gonna
the rage
have
bait
the
this
power
time.
Of a PlayStation 2, it's going to be able to run it.
PlayStation 2,
okay. Let's move on. Ladies Day.
Game.
And wait, actually. No. Hold on. We have more to talk about the Xbox thing. I forgot.
Oh, okay.
There is a post on the Lodestone from March 7th of part of the announcement. I forgot to link it in the show notes. Announcing the Final Fantasy XIV Xbox Series XS version release date. Thank you to all who participated in the open beta test. The test results are in now, and we are pleased to announce the release date for the Xbox Series XS version of Final Fantasy XIV. Release date Thursday, 21st of March, 2024. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate perks. Furthermore, we are pleased to share that the Final Fantasy XIV Starter Edition, which includes A Realm Reborn, Heavensward, and Stormblood, will be available for free as an Xbox Game Pass Ultimate perk for a limited time. New players or seasoned veterans won't want to miss this opportunity. So this perk will be available from Thursday, the 21st of March, 2024, till Friday, the 19th of April, 2024. Embark on grand adventure with fellow Warriors of Light around the world.
Okay, that's not too bad.
And then in Reddit says, Xbox Game Pass, previously Xbox Live Gold, is required to play online titles like Final Fantasy XIV. Note that Final Fantasy XIV will not be available in the Xbox Game Pass game library.
So it's not coming Game Pass. And right. But you can get the starter edition, which you shouldn't, really?
You shouldn't, no.
No, it's a bad idea, actually. It's a trap.
You need to play.
Are you like, you forced for a trial?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
Oh.
No, it must be you must have to click a button to accept it.
Actually, yeah. You know what? I probably think it's in the benefits menu, kind of like when you redeem like the free Discord month thing or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't get it unless you somehow, in before it expires, have completed up to Stormblood and all of Stormblood and like done all you want to do. Mm. There's thousands of hours of stuff you can do in the free trial.
Yeah.
Explain why they shouldn't get this. Why should they not?
If you get the starter edition, you are beholden to the subscription of Final Fantasy XIV. You own the game fully, so you can talk to other players and have all of the normal experience, but you have to pay your sub. But with the free trial, you can play all the way to the end of Stormblood, which is the second expansion of the game, for free. The only issue is there are certain caps on gil or gold and communication with other players.
If you just want to progress without paying anything extra up until the second expansion, do the free trial. You can't form parties, but you can join. Like, people can invite you, but you cannot invite them. There's stuff
and you
like
can
that.
Still do all the normal stuff like duty fight. Like, you know, that you can queue for dungeons and you get matched with random players.
Yeah,
it's just you can't like form up a group.
You also
yourself.
Can't join or form an FC. That's a big, you know.
That's like a guild.
Yeah, that's the guild. if you want to. I mean,
there's
just
so much you can do, though. Like,
eventually you'll have to pay the sub anyways.
You can get to level 70 in every class.
Yeah.
And all the crafting classes and gathering classes and do all of the quests and there's so much to do.
Yeah. Also, it's just better for people who are doing it for the story, because it's like, I've known so many people like, oh, I'm playing 14. It's cool. I'm going to take a little break. And it's like, okay, I want to get back into it now, but it's like, I got to sub again.
Mm.
And then I'm like, I have to play that month, you know? It's just
Yeah.
You know, it's better if you want to do it at your own pace and not having to worry about
Once you get into it, you can, you know, sub and get into it properly, but
I'm assuming that the starter edition does not include free game time. So, I guess
maybe the 30 days if you buy it, you might get 30 days because it's a
new
account.
You do. Yes, new accounts get 30 days.
Yeah.
But you might have already used that time on the beta, though. Or does it not?
Oh, it's probably 30 additional. Yeah, probably 30 additional.
Okay, from start of service. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe that's. Yeah, go on.
You do get the 30 day with the start edition.
Well, in that case.
But still, at least wait until the end of this. Oh, well, yeah.
Retracting our advice from before, get the starter edition. You get 30 days free.
You still, because you might not be finished through the plot by the 30 days are over.
That's getting to Stormblood in a month as a new player, that's a lot
of work.
I mean, it's possible, but like,
we're retracting our previous retraction. Don't get the starter edition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there we go.
Maybe you can pick up the starter edition on the 19th of April.
Yeah.
Yes, wait until like the last day. Yeah.
And then there's a chance.
Yeah.
You know, you can keep going for them. But, you know, there is a lot you can do. Back in my day, the free trial was like timed, I think, originally.
No.
And you could only get up to like level 15 or some rubbish as well. Like, it was rubbish.
It was low.
Was it 15?
It was 30.
Or 30, yeah, mate.
Yeah,
I thought it was 35 eventually.
No, it was, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was
no, 35 was when they raised it. I think it was lower.
14-day free trial. Yeah, 14-day trial.
14-day trial.
And then you could do hardly anything in it.
But it was like level 15. I think you're right, Mel. It was very low first, I think. And then they raised the cap to 35. Yeah.
Look how good you got it now. Enjoy the unlimited time to do three expansions of game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or two expansions.
Okay, so it was up to 35 because I was pretty sure they let you do the Titan quest line and then that was it, which would have really left a great taste in people's mouths.
That's true.
In deciding to go forward.
It was a good time to cut stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
That's kind of sarcasm because that's just after the Company of Heroes questline.
Oh yeah, true. God. That questline has thankfully been cut down a lot after the...
Yes.
Yeah. All right, now we can move on. Have fun, Xbox players. Welcome to ERCO. Next, Little Ladies Day and Hatching Tide.
Wow. That's two events.
Two festivals joined by a blossoming dream.
No, because...
Starting...
They can't do that again.
Both starting Thursday, March 14th. Lasting until the 1st of April. So
at least we're going to get more than one award because, I mean, it's two events.
Look here.
Yeah, one would think
Little Ladies
about
Day
that,
and Hatching Tide should be separate events.
Well,
and they've done this before and it was very, you know, it was upsetting. But I think they were under 16 pressure last time. There's no pressure this time around.
I thought last time it was Valentine's and Little Ladies Day.
It was.
Yeah.
That was.
But again, like, it was because of, like, dev hell from 16 and, you know, there was a lot on their plate back then.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing on their plates are empty this year.
Right.
Their plates couldn't be barer.
Right.
No. They're making the expansion.
They're doing the expansion push. I think that's what
we're saying. They've made the expansion. The minimum work.
I also think it's a result of, like, this is so they have more time to work on the 16 crossover event.
Yeah.
Also,
It's 16 again.
It's not as if we've gotten, at least this is an event. In previous years, the Make It Rain event before an expansion was literally just go to the Gold Saucer. Here's your award.
Yeah, that was rubbish.
It's a bit, pretty much the same as that.
Yeah.
Well, our good friend Jilly Aliapo is back.
Jilly Aliapo
with her
is
insane dreams.
Yeah, she's got another dream for us. So she's the quest NPC. This year's festival decorations will display will vary from city to city. Limsa, Laminsa, and the city center residential districts, however, will be decorated according to the schedule outlined below. Little Ladies Day decorations will be up from Thursday, the 14th of March, until Friday, the 22nd of March. And then Hatching Tide decorations will take over from Friday, the 22nd of March, until Monday, the 1st of April.
And Old Dar will be only Little Ladies Day, and Britannia will be only Hatching Tide.
Yes. There is only one reward. It's a reskinned Laurel.
Yeah, but look, it's a little gob. PT. It'll look
it's
at
a bit
it.
More than a reskin, but I get what you're saying.
Is it more than a reskin?
Well, there's like, it's more, the modeling is not the same.
Is look it not? At it. It looks like a gooboo to me with a Laurel, like a reef.
No, the gooboo part is the same. The things around it are different.
I thought we already had a Laurel gooboo.
Yeah, we do. We literally have this.
What I'm saying
is
the modeling on... I said yes, but the modeling is slightly different.
Okay.
But where? You're not telling us!
What is this copium?
The decorations are different.
Yeah, I understand that the wreath is different. It's pink and it's got smaller leaves. It's more like flowers. But still, it is... We already have this, even down to the wrist things. It's essentially the same.
It probably won't sneeze.
It might do a different
sneeze. It better sneeze.
Right.
I
don't want it to sneeze. I want it to do something else.
Mm. It should dance.
Sneeze flowers.
Oh, I'd love it to dance.
I like this little pink PCs. Well, it's cute.
I like that it's got a cute name.
Yeah.
Still, though.
This is already in the game, by the way. This model.
Yeah. The Laurel Gooboo. Has different leaves, but is otherwise
It is cute because
the carpet gooboo is the more unique one. But again, that is also the same.
Yeah, it is.
It has little wristlets and the carpet on its head instead.
Yeah.
I want to know what the reasoning is for why it doesn't have the plants on it back. It's back because we know that is apparently a very painful process for the gooboo, and the only reason the Laurel gooboo that you get from the sylphs is like that is because the evil sylphs took them up, like. Stripped it of its like plants on its back, and then to make it up to it, the nice sylphs put the Laurel on it.
Oh yeah,
This one's for some reason in...
It's in the first.
El Meg,
yeah.
So maybe that has to do with something. Or maybe the fact that it's called PT and came from a bog, or something like a peat bog instead.
Maybe
that's changed it
the
somehow.
The Gubu Maiden. It's PT the Gubu Maiden. So,
oh, it's a she. Little cute little Gubu. Oh. Gubina. A Gubina. It's a
my little Gubina.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
The quest's called The Princesses and the Eggs. So it will presumably have some... Some tie into the Lazy Day. But we are, once again, losing our Thorn Dynasty of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Trivia, I guess.
That's fine.
Well, it is starting
little
to feel
Lady
like...
Says...
Yeah, it's starting to feel like that whole storyline has run its course.
I think that's why they've been adding it to everything now.
Yeah.
So, guys, is the
maybe
dead?
The Thorn Lady. Maybe Aldetha is dead.
Dead.
No, hope not. That game is... Games probably is confirmed.
Game's
I mean,
his,
it was a reskin mount.
They are reskin mount and combining events. This game's over,
it's
fellas.
Over. It's over. Hashtag it Final Fantasy 14 is over party. No. I'm sure it'll be a nice event.
I don't expect too much from events these days, honestly. Especially one before an expansion, and we're gonna get like a more interesting event right after with the 16 one.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
It'll be all right. The game's not dead.
No,
don't
it's a joke.
Be silly.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
There's in the artwork, you can see Aliapo putting that wreath on the Gubu. So, I'm assuming that's going to be like one of the main characters in the story, possibly. Who knows?
I hope so.
Yeah. What if we get a talking Gubu?
Oh my god! Like, what was that troll? The Yeti that came down in the other.
Oh yeah,
Rudy.
Snuffles.
Oh, that. Well, Rudy didn't talk.
Oh, Rudy.
What was the other one?
No,
I thought you were talking about the one.
Shanks.
Shanks. Was cool.
It was.
But
Shanks,
he was in. Right? No.
No, Shanks. No, that's not. That's a person.
I can't remember his name now.
Talking Yeti.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the talk.
God, we need to stop bringing up random things. Because we spent too much time searching for it. Shaggles.
Yeah, Shaggles.
But no, I was actually talking about Rudy, but I forgot he didn't talk. He was just cute.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. That's Little Ladies' Day and Hatching Tide. We'll, of course, give our review on that. As soon as it's...
In a few weeks.
Yeah, in a few weeks. We've seen that. Okay. The 10th anniversary 14-hour broadcast is happening. It's the 9th edition. And according to the post, it marks the end of the 10th anniversary celebrations. To wrap up our 10th... Oh, yeah, right. I remember. This was teased as being part of the 10th anniversary lineup, which is very strange because we're in the 11th year now. But to wrap up our 10th anniversary celebrations, we're currently preparing a special 14-hour broadcast featuring the members of our development and operations teams. We hope you'll join us and fellow Warriors of Light for a wonderful live stream with festivities of all sorts starting on Saturday, the 13th of April, 2023 at 3 a.m. GMT. That's 4 a.m.
Yeah,
Central European time. It's 4 BST. Wait, no, but you'll be back in GMT by then. So, 3, so 4 Central.
No, we're going from GMT to BST.
Oh, shit, right. You're going to BST, right. So 4 a.m., so 5 a.m. Central European time. And 1 p.m.
Well, I'll not be there. I'll say that, Yoshipi.
We are rarely there for the 14-hour streams. There's very little in them that we need to cover.
It's never... They'll post the...
Yeah.
The snippets or the important bits.
Yeah. There might be a live
letter. We'll cover that. We normally do cover that part.
That's true, but until we get a schedule for that, we don't know. That's a big, big thing. It's for those that have never experienced one of these. They are entirely in Japanese, you will need a guide unless you understand Japanese, obviously. But
And if you don't know Japanese, we'll translate for you.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Hajimemashite, speakers.
Inu.
Stream. Yeah.
Neko. Tori.
Konbanwa, fellas.
Konnichiwa. Okay. Yep. So look out for that. So that's Saturday the 13th of April this year. All right. Well, let's get some Mogmail in here as well. That's our recent events for today. Let's see what our Moogle has brought us today. This is from Elioth Rivers from Sagittarius. Hello, speakers. I was rewatching an ASEAN, A Realm Reborn, cutscene the other day, and things started to snowball in my head. The cutscene in question is the one where Elidibus stand between 14 ASEANs, including Lahabrea in the Chrysalis. According to what we know now, the scene is inconsistent, as if these people are the convocation of 14, there is at least Igiorm, Nabrialis, Emeroloth, and Altima, they should be 13 in all. Azem can't be here because it's us, which brought me to the question why Emmet never awakened Azem's memory. Is this only because he decided to defect and not be involved in Zodiark summoning? They were close friends, such a minor disagreement should not cause such a rift between them. But has he never done it? Why? We can't be the first incarnation of Azem in 10 millennia. We know he never came before us to say, hey, we were friends once, here's your memories. But we have no proof that he never did this in the past. If not, the most likely explanation would be that Lahabrea and Elidibus opposed his awakening, but who knows? But with this came to me another question. How come Emmet didn't recognize Azem in us, except in a fleeting moment when Ardbert joined with us? He should have, otherwise, how would they awaken the other Sandardassians? How would they recognize them if not by the color of their souls? Did Emmet forgo Azem's soul color after all these years? Did Emmet forget Azem's soul color after all these years? Have fun with these ramblings. Cheers.
Why did he do that? Is he stupid?
Yeah, is he dumb? What?
Well, there's multiple reasons for why he wouldn't do this. One, Azem was not tempered by Zodiac, so would not be seeking the same goal as Emmet Silk, because they weren't involved in the summoning. Mm. They also probably weren't technically part of the convocation of the 14 at that point anyway, so they already had stopped having the same goals.
Mm-hmm. True.
They were also probably quite busy, and so weren't going around, you know, looking at everyone's soul colours to try and find Azem.
Yeah, but they find all the other ASEANs. I don't know if I believe that one.
Well, that's fair.
Don't they have, like, the unsundered ASEANs, correct me if I'm wrong, but they have, like, a disdain for the sundered ones, because they still view them as lesser. I mean, you know, even called, like, lesser ASEANs or whatever. But, I think they just don't, I mean, more than tolerate, but not like.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
I think doing that for someone you cared about would be, you know,
yeah.
I don't think they would want that, even if they were on their side.
Chad is also correct that Azem's soul crystal does not have any of his memories inside of it, because it was created. That was never intended to have crystal. That was only supposed to be amongst the convocation that stayed. Mm-hmm. The ASEANs.
That's also true. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if anything else to add to that.
I don't really know.
No.
Most of the answers. It's hard to try and fathom the minds of these people who have basically been created before our eyes in real time. In A Realm Reborn, they weren't thinking of any of this.
Right.
So
that's true. Yeah.
A lot of things in 14 look. It's a great trick of writing. And I don't want to ruin it, but a lot of the things in Final Fantasy 14 that look amazing are because they've made them amazing later on, and then used just random shit they were coming up with years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, they were thinking about it all this time.
They do it on purpose. They add stuff in that they might pick up later. Yeah. Which, without knowing what it where it will go.
Yeah. It's very common. But it's common, but it's, you know, it.
They're not
when
that
they were
good.
Realm of Bond, they weren't thinking 20 years ahead. Don't worry. We're actually going to do this.
Yeah.
There, I do think it's crazy, though, to like, one, the Warriors of Darkness, just like, not knowing what the fuck that was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Until, you know, it was their time, essentially.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Astians, too. Like, I don't know. They're just bad.
Yeah.
Until, like, it's time to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, Astians are fine, because they're creepy, like, puppet masters in the shadows, so they can come and go as they please. The Warriors of Darkness and the Orianger turns evil to take, like, what were they doing?
I still stand by, I think the Warriors of Darkness were so fucking bad when they were first introduced. It was just,
it was weird. I did not like it.
Great.
And
good
then the
payoff.
Ending was just like, we'll go back to our shard then. Bye.
Also, we're taping Minfilia?
Yeah, Minfilia will come with us.
Yeah.
Because we'll probably use her again.
Yeah.
But
that was
the second time
she died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless her.
I
think the real answer is just they were writing it kind of.
Yeah.
You know, not as they go, but maybe a couple feet ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess not. Maybe. Wasn't he? I could have sworn. Didn't Emmett Salk say he was kind of like, or someone else? He was kind of like blinded by his ambition to get Zodiac back. Now, like that was his singular goal. Like Elitibus was like fully that, mm-hmm. but it, to an extent, so was Emmett Salk.
Yeah,
that might have been
they
kind
all
of clouding
had lots of projects.
Yeah,
that's kind of clouding what he.
They had also built up. He had spent hundreds of years building up the Guardian Empire.
Mm.
Yeah,
and orchestrating that, and then before that, the Allegan Empire, which would have been a massive. And that's, you know, he found people during that. It was Van Daniel, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So
I just don't think that he. I think he would have thought that bringing Azem back would not be the same as the real Azem, because it would still be a sundered version of him. And also, if he did do that, Azem wouldn't help him. So
yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't serve his purposes.
Like, why would you ascend an ant to godhood? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
ant?
And an enemy of your goals right now.
Yeah, true.
Or like, I don't even think he'd. If Hithlodeus was not Sunder, I don't even think he'd bring him back.
No, I don't think so.
No, no. Well, there you go. Thank you, Elioth. There you go. Thank you. Next, Mogmel. From Ravna Ravni. See, they included a pronunciation guide for me.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
Yeah. I recently finished all the variant dungeons. Now that they are all released, I was curious about you guys' thoughts on them. What did you like with the variant dungeons? What do you think can be better in Dawn Trail? Were there particular moments you felt like detectives or remember fondly? What future variant dungeons do you wish they will add? And who could be the guide slash escort? If Lukiel says Galmora, he's allowed to mention a second one.
Damn. That's a hard read.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Is it a hard read?
No.
Yeah. Well, Lukiel has a very easy tell, I guess.
Galmora, of course.
What did you like with variant dungeons?
What did you want to explore Galmora with?
Well, we'll get to that part. Let's just answer the first.
What do you like about them?
The variant.
Then they were new. That's what I liked initially.
I like
it's
the
a cool system.
Yeah,
it's like a.
I like that it's a way of exploring, slightly forgotten or non-main scenario lore and characters that are slightly sidelined.
Mm-hmm.
I consider them the sequel to hard mode dungeons.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah,
hard mode with a lot more effort.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I think
the downside of that is that they're not in any roulette. I would like them to be in a roulette.
Yeah, we need.
Yeah, what
would
be better in Dawn Trail?
Mm-hmm. With the system it has, though, like I don't know if you'd want to do roulette with that, would you?
No, that's it's true.
I mean, I don't see it as a negative to have one, though. Like, if they should do a rival Wings roulette, and why not one of these?
Or if it's going to be a roulette, it's just going to be the variant dungeon, not like the Criterion or the Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, it needs some sort of, if not roulette, it needs an incentive to run it more often.
Well,
other than
if it was done with, if it was done as a roulette, I would make you would have to implement some sort of system that, like, whichever route the NPC picks has to be.
It's the route. Yeah.
Yeah, it forces a route that's randomized, but maybe tries to help you clear them all or something.
Because
a weekly challenge log would be nice.
Yeah,
just as is, where it's like you can pick any route, like you know how people are going to be, how they're going to be about
the fast one, the quick one. I already done this one 10 times, so I know it both by heart.
It's going to be annoying too, because you're going to fight the point is variety, you know, and you're just fighting this same thing every time after a while.
People would just leave if it's not the fast route. I don't think so. People don't immediately leave no matter what dungeon or raid they get. Sometimes they do, but the vast majority don't, because
they usually
just not worth it.
Grit their teeth and bear it.
Well, they have a bit more tolerance than that, but they would. Some people will fucking bum
the people that leave that are okay with taking the penalty will leave. That's just how it is. People still do that with the penalty, you know. But
I think I would like in Dawn Trail, I would like them to have a little bit more focus on the NPC you're with. I think while you're in there with them, although there's, like, the dialogue, I just feel like they're not actually that involved in the dungeon. And all the lore you get about it is just about the dungeon, really. I would like to learn more about the NPCs as well. So, like, on the one where you go with Hancock, maybe like, you can talk to him about the roots afterwards and say, like, oh,
I think you get some Nanamo lore with the Sildine subterrane.
Yeah, the Nanamo, she had a bit more because she talked about her family history. I think that was one that was well done.
Right. Yeah.
What would you want them to do, Mela? Like, just in the middle dungeon, just like...
Listen, here's my story.
I was abused by my father.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, like, you know how in, like, the Hancock one, he takes artifacts, or in the Matsu one, he fishes. Maybe around where the dungeon entrance is, it could spawn all of the trophies from the different routes. So you have the lore in the journal of the dungeon, but then around Matsya, you can go and talk to him about each fish or whatever, and then he has a bit more about himself. Like, just something about him. Learn more about Matsya and learn more about the NPCs.
I do think you get some decent stuff from Hancock, because, like, some of the Hancock stuff is just, like, you find out that he was essentially homeless beforehand, and that's not just in the follow-up quest. Like, some of the endings specifically explain more lore about him than about the dungeon than Mount
Rock. I mean, I just like that. That's the best part about the variant dungeons, probably, is the additional lore and learning about new places.
I want it to continue being non-combat NPC.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't mind it being NPCs that can do combat. I think it'd be kind of neat to have, at least in some fights, have them involved in some way. A bit more like a, not roleplay section, the instance fights or whatever, the story fights, where like, oh, you have to interact with this character at this part of the fight to do this, you know? Or, I don't know, pull your ether into Hancock or so he can do his Hancock blast.
Maybe, yeah. excuse me.
Okay. I would have used Justinian in the area as a better example of that.
No, fucking, he puts Hancock blast. Go.
Okay.
I wish the first boss had more variation than it currently does.
Yes.
The boss variation's annoying at this point. Mm-hmm. That's the worst. That's the I don't mind having to go down left like three times and interact slightly differently with the fallen tree or whatever. But having to do so many of the same boss over and over again is annoying.
Yeah.
I know it's a lot of work.
I don't mind the final boss.
Yeah, the final boss is different per route.
I don't mind that there's four variations of each of the final bosses. It's just the first one. The fact that you have to do it 12 times is quite a lot.
Maybe you could have a different middle, like first boss as well per route or something. Just I know it's a bit more effort, but I think it would really help the monotony.
Or even split it to two. Like maybe there's like just six.
That's fair. Six too, just some variety.
Yeah. I also wish.
What future? Okay.
Well, one last thing is like we've talked about it a lot, but the rewards, there has to be more.
Oh yes, the rewards. Of course, I was thinking about that too. Yeah, the rewards are shit
so
in this.
Oh ass.
Yeah.
I like
the rewards for all parts of it are bad.
Yeah.
They're not even particularly good glams you get. It's like
no.
Yeah,
and some of the mounts are cool.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah,
but the mount the Biju is just for doing all the routes or then doing the hard one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's like you're going to aim for that no matter what, but you're never going to farm it.
No.
I wish that was another thing. I wish another version of the dungeons was more, not casual, but just like more on the level of an extreme trial rather than a savage fight.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. It is pretty rough in the difficulty spike, I think. Like, yeah. I really do like them. And I think if four people is always going to be so much easier to coordinate. So I think it's easier than like a savage personally, but it is a pretty big jump.
Yeah.
It's a big jump. I feel like we need to properly.
Well,
I was expecting something closer in difficulty level to like the Dauriada or, what's it called? Those kinds of things. From,
yeah. I think maybe they could make the middle one a little less hard, and then the final one that can be the harder one.
Because
at the moment it's hard and then hard, but you have to restart.
Well, the savage one that you have to do the whole thing in one run without.
I mean, I think that's
all.
Funny and that's crazy. A great challenge, but the difficulty seems to be the same as the hard one anyway. Maybe having a difficulty jump up plus having to do it all in one go would be good.
Mm-hmm.
People might like that.
Yeah, I'm sure with Dawn Trail, now they've had, you know, an expansion to test the system out. So hopefully Gen 2 will iron some of the stuff out.
Put it in the progression system. Please make it part of gearing and progression.
That would be so. Yeah.
You need to revolutionize gearing in this game.
Yeah.
I think it's at a point where it's just not working for the characters you want us to play. You want us to be one character and to play like 50 jobs.
Yeah.
But you also lock us behind 7 weeks to gear one job.
That's one way of doing it. Mm-hmm, that's true.
And if we want to actually gear another job, we either have to have them, 10 eye levels below, or then do another 7. Gearing in this game is not good.
The gearing system in this game has not really changed.
We should have a great discussion about how this game's gearing system
probably
works.
Should.
Yeah, put that on the notes.
In the same way that the 24-man raids are used to catch up for your left side, maybe you could use these to catch up on your right side.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
I suppose crafters would complain. Well, whatever. We can talk about that.
Is it every even patch they were added? Or was it odd?
No, it was random. I'm pretty sure it was 6.1, 6.4, 6.5.
Oh, what the hell? Yeah. Okay, that's
okay.
Yeah.
If you're going to make it part of progression, maybe standardize those releases.
Well, yeah, let's standardize it. But I think this is still the experimental phase for them.
Mm.
So I can understand why it's not necessarily in some sort of concrete format.
Yeah.
Now, the bad ending is it stagnates and it's the same, like, fucking deep dungeon or some shit. If it's just exactly the same, like, you guys were making good progress and, like, it's, know, like, you gotta get to the end goal. You're about to hit the finish line. Just, you know, keep working a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't pat yourself on the back after, iteration one.
No.
There's always room to improve.
And there definitely
and
is.
And sometimes you make it worse, like Heaven on High, but it's fine.
I'm more forgiving of this because the issue here is that they were probably already working on the next two dungeons after they'd already made Dildin Subterrane.
Yeah.
It's similar to how like they made Pagos before they made Animos.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw how that turned out for the player base.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Okay, well let's get to the last part.
I will say there was no particular moments where I remember it fondly. Other than I think they look nice. I may be doing the first run with Nanamo was fun, but I've never thought.
I re-
Wow, that was incredible. I just thought this was nice.
Sildi is very interesting. I've always found that very interesting part of like the whole lore of that region. So that was, it's cool just being in there. Like, I remember the first time walking into that.
First time was always fun.
That room, I think it's the last, near the last room where you have to like do the puzzle to open the door. I don't remember exactly what you were doing. There was like some, I might be mixing everything together now, but weren't there like, the bags, right? You get the bags.
Is in the first, is in Sildin Subterranean on the left-hand side.
That was like a cool moment where it felt like we were doing something different. It also feels like a reference to like the Karn puzzle, which is also somewhat, you know, that's Belladia, which is related as well.
They have cute gimmicks. I like them a lot because you don't really get them in dungeons anymore.
Right, yeah.
No, people would hate that. Can you imagine doing... Do you imagine having to kill the little Karn head on a square in like modern game?
Flame left, fruit right.
Oh, they will never do that again. That's just hard coded in people who know.
Yeah.
And then everyone else just lets the people who know do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a lot of times people just skip those rooms because they're optional anyway, and then you just deal with the additional enemies in the final room.
True.
God, what was that? What was that one dungeon? I don't remember. Could you imagine doing Nevereep now? Picking up the fucking totems in the middle of that fight? People would riot.
Oh, they would riot.
No one liked it back then.
I am they so didn't. Glad.
But I still think it was unique and interesting. I applaud them for trying.
I hate any time they think that making you pick something up is a good mechanic. Because it's just, the game is not responsive enough for it.
But, like, a very fucked up part of me does... I miss it a little bit, you know.
I liked it,
but I understand why we don't have it anymore.
The slime in Copperbell Mines, those weird Magitek things you have to stand in Zemail Darkhold. There's so much random, interesting
that
stuff
shit
in
Zemail Darkhold is so stupid, and it's the most obvious 1.0 leftover in any dungeon. We have to stand.
I like
and
it
let
because
it
forces
down.
You to do one cycle inside the thing and explode and get some damage.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so any variant? I feel like we've talked about this before, but let's quickly
future stuff.
Ooh. If they don't touch it for a while, I would want to go not as like the sole story in that place. I'd want to go back to the void with Zero one more time for like some other kind of adventure. Again, not as like their grand return or anything, or like this is how the void will end or whatever with this fucking variant dungeon, but like as a nice side story, especially a couple patches from now.
I could see that. Actually, after we've done more with the void and potentially doing it with those NPCs that are on the first.
Celia?
Something? Oh, I wasn't thinking Silver. I was thinking of the children because they can't defend themselves.
Oh, right. I mean,
definitely like something in the first.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot
there's
we have
plenty of
that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yo, Ilmeg 2, let's go. Make another Ilmeg.
We could have a Fwoth one. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Or like a Ronkan Ruin. Or
a Ronkan Ruin would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can somehow like maybe a path opens up underneath Nabatha Reng, and we can somehow like sneak into the city and get a bit of info there. Like, there's loads of cool stuff in the first. The first was such a well-made area. They just put so much lore into it, and I want to go back.
If they're going to do one on the first, I think a good NPC to go with would be Chynuz and Delia Chai.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine.
As a couple, together, I'd love that.
Yeah, that's
nice.
Fine. There's loads of people on the first I'm glad you picked them. Not.
I suspect they'll make it only Chynuz, because I actually don't think they have that many animations for Delia Chai.
We'll make some. Fucking
she can
some.
Just, yeah. She can just, you know, just run along and hug him every now
I mean,
and then.
You don't need that. You already made her pretty expressive in the like expansion and the patches. You can reuse a lot of that stuff, especially for just like nothing zoomed in. You know, just like the player cam.
Nothing zoomed in.
Yeah.
Do you want to explore Gelmora with Lakiel?
See, that's a difficult question.
The depressed butler. And Gridania.
Oh, I like him.
Maybe you can cure his depression. Yeah, cure his depression by taking him into Gelmora.
Let's go.
Does he
on
even
a little
give
trek.
You a quest? you just get a quest marker over him saying you feel bad and you feel like you gotta do something.
What about that insane research you're on, that that weird like wooden platform?
I could see that as a West Shroud one.
Gelmoran ruin.
I could see her more with West Shroud.
What's the not Kane Senna, but the dude that was ruling Redania before her?
A little baby boy?
The baby boy. Well, he's not a baby boy. He is very old.
No, he's 200 something years old. The White Mage guild leader, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I don't remember his name right now.
Like A Rooney?
Yeah, Esumian. Esumian?
Yeah,
something like that.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
Esumian, yeah.
That could work, or maybe even Mother Mion. Like, that could work as well.
Oh, I'd love to go see Mother Mion.
Yeah. She was... There's a lot of debate on her original design in 1.0, that she was actually a Duskwhite, and that they retconned it in A Realm Reborn. If you look
closely at her... How's her debate? You can just look at the character file.
Yeah, well, it's not that easy to see, I think. I don't know if people have found her, like... I don't know if it's stored anywhere.
You should still have her character data from 1.0. Like, you can
They still have a discussion about it. I don't know why. That's a good point, Rollo. Yeah. I don't care like, about that discussion, but a lot of people are like... Mother Mion was originally a Duskwhite, maybe, possibly. And then there's, like, a picture of her, and she looks very pale. And like, okay, that's...
I mean, they definitely do use a different, like, sub-race for, like, another sub-race sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare. It happens. Which, if they're talking about that, okay, sure. Maybe it was kind of some debate. But if you're just talking about the character data, like, I'm pretty sure the 1.0 one would be out there.
Yeah. That I want to find out now. But
we could go to one of the vigils.
Mm-hmm.
There are still two vigils missing, I think.
Yeah, there are some vigils that we've not...
Dawn Vigil is what's missing.
Dawn Vigil's missing, because Steel Vigil is the one that fell.
There's Steel, Dawn, Dusk, and...
Dusk and Stone.
Stone, yeah.
But yeah, we can... Steel is in the overworld, so it's unlikely they'll make something of that.
It's where the Svara fate chain is.
Yeah. Well, if I have to pick another one, because I'm not allowed to say Gelmora, Amdapur. Just something... Ooh, I know we have a lot of Amdapur stuff already.
Four times.
But,
plus, during the MSQ a few times. But, I mean, I do agree. I like these
things. Yeah. I need an Amdapur. I don't need it just for to see Amdapur. I need to know more about the connection between the
senators.
That's
what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. Castrum Aquilae, that abandoned castrum that's in Kirthus.
Oh, yeah.
Is that one?
Yes. Oh, is that the one that we see the airship?
Yeah, it's the one you can see in the distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see one of their teleporter thingies.
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah. That would be interesting.
We could head over to the Euphemia Salt Flats and do some marky stuff as well.
Yeah.
I think only relegating Mark to that, to the Weeping. Mark's like great series is not enough, Mark.
Okay, so it says here.
I just think that there's less mysteries with Mark.
That's true, but it's such a cool aesthetic.
Yes, Lakil?
This article, 1.0 article, has her listed as a Duskwhite.
Oh.
So there you go. Original Duskwhite changed. Because they realized that the lore wouldn't work, so she's now.
It's also. Possible that just like they had her using a Duskwhite model, but she was never supposed to be a Duskwhite. That's the thing. Like sometimes they just use models for other races.
Yeah,
that's also true. But her skin is different in 1.0. Like this.
It's gonna be hard to show.
Yeah. Well, this is her 1.0 model, but you can't. Look how white she is, dude.
That's the white woman.
Yeah, she is the white woman. Okay, anyways. Yes, that's it. Thank you, Ravna Ramni, for your Mogmail.
Thank you.
That's it for Mogmail. I almost started wrapping up the show, but no. We have one more story.
Wow.
We have a Dawn Trail interview with Kate Quinar, translation lead. This is done by PC Games N.
What is
network? okay, so we'll just read it and discuss as we go. PC Games N speaks to Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail's English localization lead Kate Quinar about building the new expansion and always having reasons to cry. Final Fantasy XIV.
I also always have loads of reasons to cry.
Yeah, there are many reasons to cry, especially nowadays. FF14 Dawn Trail is a fun holiday for our Warrior of Light and the Scions as we sail to the Western Isle of Tural in search of fun, frolics, and new friends. At least that's the pitch. But English localization lead Kate Quinar tells us to still expect plenty of reasons to cry. Yeah, again. Ahead of the new expansion for the critically acclaimed MMORPG, PC Games N sat down with Quinar to chat about the challenges of localization, the regional influences of Tural, the response from the community, character development over a decade plus, and planning for the future. Lots of meat here. The opportunity to chat one-on-one with Quinar about all things Final Fantasy XIV is probably something most players would bite your hand off for, so was quick to leap on the opportunity. It was, of course, a delight. Formerly a QA tester through its early years, Quinar took a break post-Heavensward before returning to the MMORPG as a localizer for its post-Stormblood patches, often considered the time where its story really picked up the ball and just kept running. She stepped into the lead position as Michael Christopher Kochi Fox took on a new role as localizing supervisor alongside his work on Final Fantasy XVI, and as such is probably one of the most knowledgeable and enthusiastic Final Fantasy XIV experts you'll find. She was a QA tester.
That's cool. I didn't know that before.
No.
Yeah. I think that's how a lot of them get in, though.
Yeah.
It's a good way in.
Yeah.
You're doing kind of low-level stuff, and then you find your niche.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As we look towards the Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail release date in the summer, there's a real sense of it being a fun getaway after the increasingly trauma-heavy Shadowbringers and Endwalker expansions.
That's true.
Indeed, its trailers are so joyful that they managed to entice one of my coworkers to start playing the game himself. While there's obviously going to be more nuance to it than that, I remark that Final Fantasy XIV is a game that loves to keep you on the brink of potentially crying at any point, and ask Quinar if the team's making a specific effort to have a more fun time out of the gate, especially after the relatively lighthearted patch 6.55 storyline featuring newcomer Wuklamot. Yeah, she muses. I mean, I don't think you're ever going to be lacking in reasons to cry, she laughs. But there is an energy to Dawn Trail that I quite enjoy. It's got a big energy that I've had a lot of fun with, especially in the voice recording. I just have to say, this is also in the title. Final Fantasy XIV has big energy. And I am destroyed by the internet, but I default to adding dick in there. It's got big dick energy. It's all constantly. I'm sorry.
It kind of does, you know.
So no, every time I read that, that's what I think in my mind. Quinar also mentions that she enjoys quests with dark humor, such as the glamorous city of Yulmore in Shadowbringers and its model of indentured servitude.
That was funny.
That's the humor.
I think slavery is funny.
Real knee slapper, that one. She mulls on the elite.
I was in tears from laughter during that part.
When they threw that person out of the top story.
Oh, that was
right. I chortled.
Yeah, because they had
it coming.
I love going through Poor Town where they eat meal and then...
Then
they learned that they were eating their friends. That's hilarious. That
actually, Shadowbringers is a comedy. It's just so funny. She mulls on the elitist nature of its wealthy, oblivious citizens. My servant annoyed me, so I pushed him into the sea. That's so funny because it's so absurd.
It is funny.
Yeah.
Exactly what we were joking about.
Yeah. We've been told that Dawn Trail will also see the Scions clash on opposing sides of its leadership conflict, and we've already begun to see the first hints of those teams taking shape as they prepare to head over in patch 6.55. Interestingly, Quinar says that she was initially wary of involving too many familiar faces from the offset, but that she was won over by the implementation. I'm revealing a little of my innate cynicism here, so hopefully I won't get in too much trouble, but we had this potential raised at the end of 6.0, the Endwalker main quest, of not being with the Scions anymore, she tells me. When I first learned that we were going to actually have quite a few of them entered in with us, I was like, no. I want to give more airtime to new characters. But actually, having gone through the script and gone through recording and seeing the reasons they are over there, how they interact with the new characters and what they bring out in everyone, I really enjoyed it, she says. So they kind of defeated my cynicism there. It's been a really fun thing, and there's a few things in particular that I think people will really enjoy. Well, I
think it's encouraging, but I don't expect you to say anything else.
Well, true. No. I mean, we had this big issue with how we immediately stopped. We had the one patch of brand new adventure. We got our new Scion gear. We were ready to set out in the world being adventure again, and then it was immediately straight back into it with the Scions.
Yeah.
They'll always be with
only
us.
Only some of them. Sometimes.
True. Mm-hmm.
We'll never not be a Scion. We've been branded for life. The Scions are forever.
Yeah. I hope we... I like when we need new characters in
honestly,
the story.
When I enter my house, I'm surprised they're not there. Like, it's gotten so bad.
They've just moved in.
Just out of chair, like, yeah. Oh, hello. Please.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Okay. It's a format that worked very well in Heavensward, where a large chunk of the expansion was spent primarily with just Alphino and Tataru, who were joined by the stoic dragoon Estinian. As we see characters evolve from expansion to expansion, Quinar feels that Estinian is probably the one who's changed the most. He's kept some of his original personality elements, but as he's been more and more exposed to the world, he's opened up a lot as a character, which has given us a lot of really fun opportunities to write him with that sort of wry sense of humor that he has. I bring up one of my favorite Estinian moments of all time, his optional appearances at your bedroom in Endwalker, where he's trying to get away from the festivities and ends his brief conversation by jumping out of your window. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Out of context, that's such a weird sentence.
Yeah.
Weird, with very weird implications.
Yeah.
I mean, even in context, it's quite funny.
Yeah.
That was a good one. Was that the... That was after the burger, wasn't it? The famous burger.
No, that was much. That's much later than that. It's after you. I think it's after you get back from the moon because you can't pick Orionje at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So when you get back from the moon, there are a lot of. This game is very strange.
That was very common in Endwalker, though, to have these weird, like, end of day scenes, which I think I kind of liked.
Mm.
They did that in Shadowbringers as well.
When we went back to the inn room.
Yeah,
I kind of like it. It makes it feel like time is actually passing.
Yeah. Was that particular stage direction one the localization team knew was coming? No, that was a surprise, Quinar says with a laugh. Sometimes when we're working on the game, there will be something that one of us sees that we didn't know was coming and we'll call everyone else over to say, look at this. I definitely did that with Estinian. He's continued to build on that mysterious but warm persona. A particularly big recent fan response came from an Endwalker scene where the Warrior of Light and their companions walk in on Estinian doing one-armed push-ups, shirtless and sweaty. I think Rob Vernon, Estinian's English voice actor, has really been enjoying those too, Quinar says with a smile. That's when they fully leaned into that meme, I guess.
Yeah.
That's when... They were using the sweat physics
they were
as well.
Using technology.
The sweat technology. Okay.
Yeah, always, once they have something new, you can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the new toy.
Even new words as well. Like this expansion, we're going to say this word loads because we've learned a new word in the dictionary. It's madness.
Yeah.
The word of the expansion.
It happens every time.
I'm looking forward to the new one.
Yeah. Also, coming to the forefront in Dawntrail is Kryle. She's the first person seen picking up a paintbrush to learn the new Final Fantasy XIV Pictomancer job, and her chirpy comebacks mixed with her willingness to step up where needed have long made her a favorite of mine, so I ask Quinar if she's enjoyed Kryle taking a more prominent role. It's been a sort of revelatory experience for me personally, she remarks. I told people when we started recording this expansion, I'm not sure I really know what Kryle wants. As we've written her for this expansion, seeing more of what her history is and how she reacts to it as a person And then we've gone through the process of acting it, which always really adds a layer of depth. It makes you think about the things that you would not necessarily consider when you were writing it. Our actors usually have really good instincts, so they'll bring something to the character, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I think just the process of doing all that writing and recording, I've really come to understand and like Kryle, she says with a smile. And I hope that other people will follow that journey as well, because, yeah, she's now quite dear to me. And I hope that she can continue to take sort of a more active role, at least through these upcoming patches, because I think she has more to say. I know I can't wait to see it. Kryle is a good egg, so it'll be nice to see her get more attention in the MSQ. I think we talked about that before.
It must be tough to write characters in such prominent ways when they've spent like most of the game being background. It'd be like if next expansion after this, Hoary Boulder's the main character. Like we know almost nothing about him, so they have to come up with a lot of history.
Kryle's personality is way more.
But you know what I mean. Like it is fleshed out to some degree, but a lot of it's. It's very limited still.
Yeah,
I'd say limited as like Tataru, really.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And more or less.
Yeah,
if she suddenly stepped up and like joined us on the adventure the whole time, I think it'd be difficult to.
Well,
Kryle, to keep her going. There's a lot to.
Tataru did that in Heavensward, right? She suddenly stepped up, became a big character, and now we. She's a big. We know her now, right?
Yeah.
The same's going to happen now. She's going to get the same journey, I think. And I think
it's going to be nice to see Kryle.
Yeah, I've wanted her to be a big character for a while. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say Tataru's like sort of conniving personality doesn't even really come through until you get to Stormblood.
Right.
Yeah, when she gets kicks out for spending all that money and all that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. As for Tyrell itself, our next destination has come up previously in bits and pieces of lore, but it's largely new to us, although perhaps crucially, not to those who've been living there. We did have some text about it in-game before, Quinar notes. The Blue Mage quests come to mind, as the roots of the job are said to originate in what was at the time called the New World, a term the Final Fantasy XIV writing team has since spent a lot of time considering.
That's good, because fucking bizarre. In retrospect,
yeah,
I knew they were trying to step away from the New World terms, because in the trailer they even say it's like it's a place you call the New World.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can't speak authoritatively. What is this word?
Authoritatively.
On what they were thinking, Quinar says, of the original Realm Reborn era. I definitely get the vibe that this was sort of a set piece that just sort of existed, and nobody really planned to actually go there, which, you know, is something that always happens over the course of a 10-year game. So it's been a little bit challenging for things. Even the term, the New World itself, that definitely has real-world connotations.
So she says a Realm Reborn there. Did the New World exist as a concept in 1.0?
Don't think so. Don't think that was ever mentioned in 1.0. Okay. No.
Maybe on
US. I'm sure someone, and I say that as someone who has played through the MSQ of 1.0 several times now. So there's no mention of it, at least in any MSQ. Maybe like an obscure character on the docks of Limsa-Liminsa in 1.0 says, my cousin went to the New World or something. I'm sure someone will correct me.
See, I'm disappointed in how quickly you answered that, because I wanted more of that expression you very briefly gave just now of trying to remember 1.0.
No, so that one I think I would have remembered. The approach the team has taken with Dawntrail, then, is to recognize this former usage and address it head-on. We've taken an approach that I think some people picked up on in the trailer of having the people who are from there be a bit sarcastic about it. Wuklamot, our first in-game female Hrothgar, very pointedly refers to Tyrell as the land you call the New World, even giving a wry smile that breaks into a grin. My home, Tyrell.
I like the New World, Rollo.
I didn't pre-read that.
No.
Okay. I promise.
Mr. Strummer, pre-read.
No!
I like that they've done that, because it kind of... It's better to... Instead of trying to like retcon it awkwardly, it's more fun to make it so the characters were just more ignorant and are learning and more like the real world. I think I prefer this.
I think it's a kind of nice way for the to signal to the player as well. It's like, hey, we want to step back from this term a little bit, some of this language, because it's not particularly what we want to portray here.
Imagine if we still called America the new world in the current day.
Yeah. That would be strange.
That would be wild. It's not a,
You know what? You should send over like a new wave of European settlers. You
well,
know?
Let's do it again.
We can start it all
let's
over
again. Let's do it again, folks. Yeah. The new world. We're coming.
Second time's the charm. 2.0.
Okay. We didn't want to completely depart from this setting and the influences of the real world, North America, South America, and the indigenous people there, Quinnar explains. But at the same time, it's definitely a huge issue to be using elements from indigenous cultures without direct input from the people from those cultures. So I think comparatively, when you see Dawn Trail versus some of our previous works, stuff like Doma, you will see that we really tried to lean further towards inspiration as opposed to something more appropriative.
That's probably a good thing as well.
Yes.
Just taking some inspiration rather than trying to say this is how it is.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult balance to strike because you don't want it to feel inauthentic, but you also don't want it to feel like you're actually like exoticizing what actually exists.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But I think that's it's clever because a lot of the areas are influenced by multiple quite disparate real world cultures. So you can clearly see the inspiration without at any point them saying like, this is what this place is like, because it's not.
Yeah,
I think they've done. Yeah. They seem to have done quite a clever job.
I think that a good example of it already is just the Ronkin with, like, it was Incan culture, right? It was really, especially with the Amaro, too, which is, like, already a real-world mythology. Mm-hmm. I think that was very good inspiration from what I've, at least, I can tell.
Yeah.
People seem
I think that's less of a tightrope to walk with the Ronkins, though, because it's not... Like, the location is not explicitly trying to draw a comparison.
Yeah,
what happens.
That's true. This is sort of like globally situated as the Americas.
It is much harder when you're doing a nation that is supposed to be, you know, tied to something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like how Eorzea technically takes the place of where Africa would be in if you are equivocating the world map of a theorist to the real world, but nothing in Eorzea is trying to replicate Africa in any way, whereas this is very clearly drawing a comparison between the Americas and Toral.
Yeah. You never know if you're striking the right balance, she muses, but we have made an effort, so I hope people enjoy it at the same time. We don't want to rewrite it and write out all of these elements, because I know we have a lot of people in Latin America, for instance, who would love to see a little bit of their culture represented. So it's all about striking that balance.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Yeah.
Now, they really like our servers.
Yeah. Well, that's also true.
That is
true. No.
Don't worry, Yoshi-P's going to BrazilCon again next year.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is a little
funny. We'll take
funny.
The culture, thank you.
Yeah, that's we'll it. Take that. We're thank not, you. Yeah. Bye.
we'll see what happens with the virtual data centers, because that worked out quite well, at least the test of it did.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's looking positive for countries that don't necessarily have data centers in them.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, I think they're probably regretting buying physical data centers in Oceania.
Probably.
Yeah, probably
that's
a little bit.
It's still so crazy to me. Was there really that much demand?
We questioned that. Well, it clearly
because
not.
Because the Japanese didn't want so many Australians on their servers.
It's got to be like a quarantine thing. Well, like, I get these weird Australian people the fuck out of here right now.
I think it was.
Yeah, I think so. They were that... I mean, yeah,
they were taking over specific servers as this is the Australian official server, and it probably they probably just didn't want to enter.
They're probably like paying out of their ass for those data centers that are barely used. Like the numbers for Oceania is very low.
Because everyone was already established as well. Yeah. Oh god, that would be wild.
Could you imagine? Like, sorry, this data center is not working out. We'll transfer your character for free, but like,
it can happen.
Have we ever had a server merge in this game's history?
1.0 to A Realm Reborn.
Yeah, but I mean, outside of that, though, since 2.0 came out, I don't think we have. We've only ever gained servers.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember.
No.
The North American data center is also, to be honest, that's true. The North American data center is quite in an awkward place.
I think we have too much in North America. I don't think we need the next one.
No, I'm 1.0 brained. I'm mixing 1.0 and 1.1.
There were splits. There have been tabs and servers have changed and moved to different data centers, but I don't think we've ever actually merged two servers into one.
No.
No. I don't think that fourth North American data center is going to really be much of anything until they expand it out to be the total 8 that it's supposed to be, ultimately.
Yeah.
Because 4 is very small.
Yes. True.
I mean,
we're getting one soon as well, Rolly, a third European one.
Yeah.
That's fine for Europe. I'm surprised you didn't get that earlier.
I think Europe's in a fine position right now.
Yeah, I think so.
You never really suffer with queues except for expansion launches.
No, yeah, these days you don't.
Well, now we're
seeing come expansion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
John Trail's coming to change that. Yeah, data center expansion is supposed to happen this year for Europe. I think they said late summer, I think. So around Dawn Trail, that would be. That's strange.
It'll probably be shortly after, I imagine.
Yeah.
I think the reason they keep buying servers is a variation in how people congregate in Japan versus versus the West, because in Japan they seem to prefer smaller servers with less people, whereas in the West people prefer to all be in the one data center or world,
yeah,
if possible.
Yeah, sure. I just don't think that kind of translate to how we do it here.
No,
but I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have numbers that we can't see
to just that way.
It's an MMO.
It used to be a big deal to have your server identity.
Yeah.
And you'd have a name within your server and you'd have a community on your server, but we don't necessarily do that much anymore.
I don't really have any evidence of this, but it's possible. I mean, because we don't hear about it, but I feel as if there's not much known server identity in Japan.
Probably not.
If there is, please let us know, because I don't know anything about.
We are not in the Hongo sphere, so.
No. The only thing I know about their server identity is they're very good at, if someone does something that they don't like, making that person know.
That's not a server identity thing, that's just a general cultural thing. That's just all the data centers in Japan.
Well, as individual servers, I don't know if there's much can't think of any Japanese server right now, but we're in this community.
Yeah,
I do feel bad. I feel like the only thing I hear about Japanese communities, aside from minor community events, any community thing is always I don't know, this guy fucked up the raid. We're gonna harass him till we're gonna put him on a list.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, I gotta wonder. What do Japanese people think of the billboard thing? That's got to be crazy, right? They did what? In Texas?
God, that whole story. Also, chat, I saw the expansion was supposed to happen in 2023. It just didn't happen last year.
Oh, it just didn't happen?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We passed it in silence.
Did he?
So.
Was it at?
Maybe it's not happening.
By the time, or there was news, but we just forgot, but I don't remember.
I think maybe it just isn't happening. So,
if it's going to happen, it should happen realistically before the expansion, because if they have to take the servers down for 2 days or whatever just after launch, that's going to be pretty disastrous.
Well,
I think the timing they released the Oceanic servers was terrible. I think doing it after the expansion launches is a bad idea.
Yeah,
it's a really bad idea.
You're not capturing the people that you want to capture that are just starting again.
I love if the EU data center expansion was halted because of the cost of running the Oceanian data center. There's some sort of effect there.
You're stealing resources from everyone else.
We can't expand anymore. okay. Well,
hold on.
Yeah.
There's one event, actually, a community cross event I do remember that was fucking bonkers. I think there was a Japanese art contest for 14, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out, I think one of the contestants was using AI art, right? And they were pretty quick about okay, people made a fuss about it in the Japanese community. And, they got it sorted out. But in the crossover to the American community. People were like, why is no one talking about this? Like, why? Like, are you guys just going to stay silent on this one? Side on you guys. I'm like, we don't speak Japanese. No. And this just happened. And by the time we heard about it, it was already taken care of.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Insane. That's insane. Insane moment I saw. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Shout out. Shout out.
Shout out to Twitter.
Yeah. Shout out to Twitter. The cesspool. All right. Final Fantasy XIV is set to launch summer. This is the last part. Final Fantasy XIV is set to launch in summer 2024. Game director and producer Naoki Yoshida says the team has a date in mind internally, but that he doesn't want to commit to one publicly until he's certain they'll meet it without any delays. While you wait... Okay, so that's it. Interestingly, we might...
They don't do that this year.
We might know when we get the date, though. That will probably be during that 14 hours. Or is it 14 hours stream? Which is, by the way, a bit late for a release date in my humble onion.
Yeah, but just give me enough time to book some time off and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. I think they'll give you enough time to do that.
Yeah.
Some people have, like, really horrible workplaces and bosses who are like, you have to sort your next year's, like, your next whole annual year's.
That's true. Like,
no.
We have unlimited PTO. We got to put PTO at the start of January.
Let me just take the time off when I need it.
All right. Well, that's it, folks. That's the end of the show. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week. Same time, same place. Remember to follow on Twitter at SpeakersXIV, twitch.tv/speakersofheidlin, youtube.com/speakersXIV, /Discord in chat if you want to join our Discord server. Don't be a bot. If you're watching on demand, links in the description. Remember to send us mogmail, speakersxiv.com/mogmail. And if you're watching live, be cool and also watch the post show. We'll see you there. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
You've just listened to an episode of Speakers of Eidolon, produced by Speakers Network. Producer for this episode was Lukeel Bravestone. Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy XIV is a registered trademark of Square Enix Holding Company Limited. If you would like to support the show, consider pledging to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/speakersxiv or buy some merch at teespring.com/stores/speakersxiv. Link to both of these sites, as well as our Discord server, is provided in the episode description. Thank you for listening to this Speakers Network production.